Fellow citizens, it has come to the attention of my benevolent administration that the bewigged head honcho of the USA wants to buy Greenland, or failing that, invade it. This will never happen on my watch. In a land where the nights are 6 months long, any invading forces will be ambushed by legions of specially trained polar bears, inspired by Lorik Berenson, the armored ice bear throwing frozen snowballs. Forced to retreat, the invading forces will depart, leaving me free to extend my firm but fair dominion throughout the polar regions and beyond. Here endeth my address.
Rhubarb.
Welcome, dear listeners, one and all, to this, the latest in a long line of Staggering Stories podcasts. I'm Crumbly.
I'm Fake Keith.
I'm Adam.
I'm Master Man.
I'm Jay.
And I, yes, I am...
wearing nipple clamps for some reason. I told you to take them off.
But they hurt and it's stiff and I can't pull them because they go...
Indeed.
Anyway, without further ado, golden compass besides, it's the news with El Presidente.
Not Northern Lights.
Blake 7 News.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Reboot enters development hell.
Dun, dun, dun.
British director Peter Hoare, what is he good for, has announced his intention to reboot Terry Nation's classic BBC series, Blake 7. The Hoare CV includes... Am I proud? It is Hoare, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
H just sounds good. The Hoare CV.
The Hoare CV includes directing the likes of Grange Hill, Spooks, Da Vinci's Demons, Daredevil, Iron Fist, The Defenders, Altered Carbon, The Umbrella Academy, The Last of Us, and Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. For the latter, he directed A Good Man Goes to War, The Robot Revolution, and Lucky Day, so he knows his way around sci-fi. Back in May 2024, Hoare teamed up with Matthew Bouch and Big Finish's money man, Jason Haig-Ellery, to create the independent production company Multitude Productions, with an eye towards genre-based content. Bouch said,
"We look back at when we were young with a degree of nostalgia, but also think about the 70s and 80s as we were growing up and the amount of genre material that was available, whether it was Blake 7 or the Narnia adaptation. We are looking to the international market and seeing if there is a way of dovetailing that British low-budget sensibility with international markets. We know in the US there's a big contraction and we all need to think about finding ways to make things more economical."
According to Deadline, Hoare plans to direct Blake 7's reboot, which will go out to potential buyers soon. The trio would love it to go to the BBC and will likely seek co-pro funding from the American streamers and European players like RTL. For now, we can probably add it to the increasingly long list of announced projects that may or may not even materialise, such as the Sapphire and Steel reboot, the Rivers of London series, the Mega City 1 TV show, the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series, and even the previous Blake 7 reboot that Sky were going to make.
Yes, I don't have great hopes this will actually happen. No.
I wonder how that will affect Big Finish's Blake 7 audio range.
Ooh. It's basically dead now, isn't it, unfortunately?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's a lot of people that are dead, yeah.
Well, yes, yeah, I've only really got two original cast left, I think.
But there was murmurs of a Sapphire.
Well, is there...
Villa Canyon. Yeah, Villa
Villa's retired. He's quite
far. He's not dead.
He's not dead, but he's very unwell. He's got dementia.
Ooh,
he's quite far along, I think.
Yeah. So, who would we have as Blake?
Ooh.
Somebody classically trained.
A bit rugged.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I know we wouldn't get him.
Right.
Because, you know.
He's dead.
Marvel and shit.
All right.
Ruffle up Tom Hiddleston and give him a bit of a beard.
Mm-hmm. That's a possibility.
No. No. I'd see more.
No, I want to ruffle up Tom Hiddleston.
I would see him more as a Villa. Villa or Avon.
Oh, I'd see him as Avon, actually.
Maybe Avon, yes, you're right.
Villa or Avon.
Maybe Tom Hardy. He's a bit more rough around the edges, isn't he?
Cumberdick Bendy Patch.
Yes.
No. There was, one of the Game of Thrones.
Richard Madden?
Yes.
Played Robb Stark?
Yes.
Or Jon Snow?
Yeah.
Jon Snow could do it.
Yeah. looking at towards Gareth Thomas, I'll get it right in a minute. Mm-hmm. It's more of a chunkier, larger framed.
Not important to the character particularly, but yeah.
Yeah, I know, but.
Well, the only stipulation, whoever plays Avon in the new series, it must be written into his contract, only one smile in episode.
Oh, yeah, I don't think that goes without saying. Mm. Any more news?
Doctor Who news.
Ooh. Oh, really?
Three more Target books.
Okay.
Yes, somewhat more dependable than trying to make a TV series are Doctor Who Target books range. Back to regularly pumping out new adaptations of TV stories. Mm. During March, we have the following books. Aliens of London, adapted by Joseph Lister. The Satan Pit, adapted by Matt Jones, and apparently the audiobook is read by Claire Rushmore, Ida from the TV episodes. Johnny Duty, Danny, and Silas Carson, the Ood, and Maureen O'Brien. That's a different one.
Yeah.
The Time of Angels, adapted by Jenny T. Colgan, and read by Maureen O'Brien as well. Mm. All three were originally two-parters on TV, each one from Eccleston and Tennant and Smith's eras. The covers have already been released, naturally with the third cover featuring Amy Pond front and centre. There is currently no word on the audiobook for Aliens of London.
Mm, yeah, oddly.
That's an odd one to have on audiobook, isn't it? It's going to be lots of farting in it.
Maureen O'Brien will be doing her best.
Maureen, you're going to love this. Sit down and read this scene.
Well, feed some beans first.
There haven't been a lot of Target books from the original, so they've now got, 20 years worth to novelise again.
I'm loving the sound of Satan Pit as a book. Yeah. That'd be quite good, wouldn't it?
Aliens of London, they could do more justice to the story than I think they'd managed on TV.
Yeah. You mean have a bit more of the Prime Minister in it before he dies?
Yeah. And not be quite so cartoony with the villains.
Yeah, that's true. A bit more threatening.
Well, it depends. Is it keeping to the old Target stipulations?
125 pages, then stop.
Yeah.
They are a very similar format. Yeah.
But even since said that, the old Target books managed to expand various things and were going on a little bit more background detail.
One of my favourite Target books is the Remembrance one.
Yes. I wonder how menacing the space pig will be in Aliens of London.
Oh, yeah. Will Tosh get named?
Good question.
As it was confirmed in Torchwood that she was the same character.
Yeah.
Oh, don't know.
Next.
Star Wars.
Dead.
Kennedy steps down.
So I was nearly right.
Similar to death.
To death. Kathleen Kennedy has announced that she is stepping down as president of Lucasfilms, having helmed the studio for 14 years.
Ooh, I can't believe it's quite that long, yeah.
Her time hasn't been without its problems, but she's given us far more Star Wars content than we ever had in George Lucas's time, including a sequel trilogy, two non-saga films, and many, many TV series, including Mandalorian, Andor, and The Bad Batch, to name a few. Two more films are currently in post-production from her time as Supreme Leader, namely The Mandalorian and Grogu, Star Wars Starfighter, due out May and next year respectively. Existing creative Big Cheese and Lucas's chosen Padawan, Dave Filoni will be taking Kennedy's place alongside new co-president, I'm going to mangle this, Lin-Win Brennan. Mm-hmm. Next up for Star Wars is animated Disney Plus series Maul, Shadow Lord.
I thought that was a joke when I first read it. But what, no, that? Maul, Shadow Lord.
Yeah, no, it's a real thing.
Yeah.
Well, he's turned up in a few places, hasn't he?
Well, Solo was meant to be a trilogy originally, until it failed. It did okay at the box office, but because of all the reshoots, it massively went over budget.
Yeah.
But that was going to be a trilogy, and it would then go on to show Maul what's happened to him since he got chopped in two.
Oh, yeah, because he was going to be part of that syndicate or whatever.
Since he got chopped in two.
Yeah, he got better.
He got better.
Yeah, he returned in, was it Star Wars? Run of the Clone Wars. Or was it Rebels? I know he's back in, but...
I'm not quite sure, yeah. And he appeared in Solo, A Star Wars Story.
Yeah.
Right.
Back on screen for the first time in live action form.
It would have been more interesting if the two halves went their separate ways.
Mm. Yeah.
Or they grew into two sort of separate individuals, like an amoeba.
Oh, dear.
So you'd have, like, the wrong trousers walking around.
I think it was just his upper half that remained, because he had...
Robot legs.
I think he had, like, some cybernetic legs or whatever.
He did at one point. Did he get cloned legs afterwards? I'm not quite sure.
Definitely wrong trousers territory.
Yeah, Kathleen Kennedy, apparently, is 72.
Yes, she would be. Any more news?
Yep. Life on Mars... Third series, not as dead as we thought.
Wow.
For some time now, the creators of Life on Mars and Ashes to Ashes have been trying to get a third series going in the saga, shopping around the pilot script. Back in 2023, they apparently gave up, unable to get the BBC interested. They even went so far as to perform a live table read of the pilot for the paying public at a BFI event. Nevertheless, it appears that they hadn't entirely given up hope, with co-creator Ashley Farrow suggesting they may have found a new interest, perhaps from someone other than the BBC, saying,
"Something is stirring in the Life on Mars world. I am sworn to secrecy, but the Cortina isn't ready for the scrapyard just yet. It really puzzled us that no one wanted to make Lazarus. The fans certainly did. We had always planned to do three series, not two."
Of course, they could be thinking about a novelization or audio series, but maybe we just might yet get to see Gene Hunt kicking the nonce on our screens again.
It will be interesting to see how they could continue the series, because obviously at the end of Ashes to Ashes, everybody finds out that they're slightly dead.
Yep. Obviously, a lot of people saw the pilot read-through, so how it's set up. And apparently Sam Tyler is, in modern day, almost in the Gene Hunt role, as having trouble with all the modern stuff.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, so from his point of view, he's entirely forgotten everything that happened. But, of course, he's in another alternative reality, and Gene Hunt is in a care home. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think by its very title, it means it's also, there's some sort of rebirth or regeneration. So.
Yeah.
Any more news?
No, but any I have addendums? An addendum.
Oh, yes.
You have an addendum. Well, you have an addendum.
If you haven't noticed already, the new trailer for Masters of the Universe dropped the last couple of days.
Yes.
And everything that was wrong with the 1987 film has been fixed, apart from one thing.
What's that?
It's still slightly set on Earth, but it's also slightly set on Eternia.
Yeah.
All the right costumes. The only thing missing was Orko. So we still haven't got Orko, but it's possible like where Marvel edit out some of the bits for the trailers and then reinsert them back in for the film. Maybe Orko's there. But yeah, everything looks good. There's loads of Easter eggs in the trailer. You have to be really careful though, because it's all really quick and everything. Mm-hmm. So I'll be demanding that everyone, plus my family, go and see this.
We will go and see Masters.
Is this
going to
be another Moomin incident?
No, I actually like Masters. Sorry.
So who's playing He-Man then?
Oh, I forget his name now. Very handsome young chap. Mm-hmm.
I don't recognise him.
Have we seen him in other things?
Possibly other American programmes.
Looking him up.
Look him up. I'll just gush for a bit longer.
We know who's playing Skeletor.
Oh,
Jared Lee, yes.
Jared Leto.
But he's got a mask on. Yeah, he's got a mask on, so...
Well, he'd kind of need to be.
this does worry me, because he is a method actor and carries the role off stage while he's playing it. So can we find him, Jared Leto, robbing banks and causing chaos?
Yeah, and Idris Elba.
It's quite a cast, isn't it?
It's got an aura in it.
Yeah, it's got Marina Baccarin, it's got Alison Brie.
Idris Elba, Alison Brie, Oh, Kristen Wiig.
And
I still can't find He-Man. Where are you,
Adam,
He-Man?
Look for Adam.
Oh, there he is. Nicholas Galestine. I recognise him, but what have I seen him in?
But also, Cringer's in it.
Oh, yeah. CG, presumably.
Yeah, CG Cringer. And this means, of course, that there's going to be another line of action figures that I have to collect.
Yeah, of course.
Well, that's Christmas sorted for you next year.
Alison Brie is Evil Lynn.
Oh, I know. Oh. She looks really good as well. I saw Beast Man, Spycord, Trapjaw. Yes.
Get away from that Trapjaw.
But yeah, something no, I'm revved up now. There. So that's out. The film's out June the 5th. We've got plenty of time to organise a big party, get some T-shirts.
He's over there having a little crisis.
He is having a little crisis on June's chair. Okay, so we know what we're doing around June the 5th.
Yeah. Unless we're at Stonehenge. I don't know when you're planning that for.
We will have to discuss that.
Yes.
When it's not quite so muddy and moist.
Well, it's a lottery, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's the end of the news. Right, we have been tuning into Paramount Plus recently, pressing that special button.
Oh, really?
not
that special button. That's for later.
Star Trek Starfleet Academy. Pause for music. Why did you do Star Wars
I don't know,
then?
I just
Oh, my God.
Can edit that out.
No, we won't. Okay, who wants to start?
Well, talking of pause for music, I didn't really notice much of a theme tune gripping me with it.
There wasn't in the first episode. The first episode entirely missed the theme thing and just had the flag and the font. But, you know, they introduced the theme song on theme music on the second episode.
Yeah,
onwards.
One thing we did notice, you know, they do that little ident thing.
Oh, yes.
Did you notice that as it's going, you get do-do-do-doom. Are they setting up the laying the groundwork for Doctor Who to meet Star Trek?
Yes.
Because it definitely goes...
If only.
They're missing a few ships in that ident, though. They're missing the Protostar from Prodigy.
Yeah, It's quite a mixed bag, because mostly they ignore Prodigy entirely. It doesn't exist, but...
Except
there is a character.
There's a lot of callbacks to Prodigy in this.
Yeah, and also Lower Decks. Yeah,
the Cerritos.
Yeah.
But that's the other one I was trying to think of, yes.
Okay. Who wants... Adam, you start.
Okay.
We haven't started?
I'm struggling a bit with this one. The first episode, I found it really hard to care about any of the characters at all.
Ooh.
I know they're trying really hard to make you feel something, particularly for the central character or whatever his name is.
Caleb.
Indeed, I can't even remember any of their names, and that's very telling. But it gets better as they go through the episodes, but I don't really care yet, basically.
No.
This is good, because me and Keith really enjoyed this, and I thought everyone would enjoy it, so I was planning to play devil's advocate and really badmouth it, because I thought everyone here would enjoy it, but as you're being the Mr. Grumpy Pants, I don't have to.
I don't actually really negative say about it, but I'm not going to be positive to say about it either. It's just there.
I'd agree with that. It was quite middling. My favourite...
Yeah, mid. Very mid.
my favourite probably was the first episode, because there was more urgency with it. But with the second two, particularly the third one, I thought it was a bit slow. And I wanted to check my phone and I had to stop myself.
I struggled with the first one, particularly with not looking at my phone.
Yeah. And I think the third one went more for comedy more than anything else. And that's fine. Yeah. That's fine if you know you're in for a comedy episode.
But I think that seems to be the trend. I mean, let's say you have a good pilot episode. And then the episodes that follow, they start fair to middling and only gradually start building up. I mean, because I found that with the first season of Next Gen. Encounter at Farpoint was okay, but as I say, some of the episodes that followed were rather cringeworthy.
That first season had its problems.
Yeah.
Am I the only one here who really, really enjoyed this?
I also really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed the pilot. I mean, I thought
the pilot did was actually up there in the really good Trek pilots.
Mm. Yeah, okay. I agree.
There's, as you mentioned, Next Gen, Encounter at Farpoint, it was a little bit of a weak pilot when you come back and look at it later. I mean, of course, it was an important one because Next Gen was the new thing to try and carry on Trek. Yeah. But this one, I think it effectively did what it was meant to do.
Yeah.
We got to see Caleb. We got to know his motivations. We got to know the history about him. I mean, of course, he's going to be like one of the central characters along with Nala Ake as well, who's the Captain Chancellor. We got to see the Athena, which is absolutely a beautiful ship. Yeah. I love that design, just from the actual exterior view, even before you get inside and take a look at the atrium part of it as well. We get all... Yes, Keith.
Personally, I think the Athena looks spectacular with her wings on. I'm not quite liking her when she's planet side.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's just a personal
opinion. Yeah, but full flow.
Yeah, in full flow.
In full flow. Yeah, it is a beautiful ship. We get to see the new cadets as well. We get to see the core group of Genesis, Darum, who's the sort of jock, and he's just kind of the annoying one. Sam, the photonic. We get introduced to them. We do find where they're coming from and stuff. Yeah. And it all gels together, and then we get the main part of the episode, which is the attack by the Nala Vrel or whatever. Actually, I can't remember what it was called. I can't remember the name of that thing. But just seeing how everyone pulled together in that episode, it made the group cohesive very, very quickly. And I loved that for what they did in this episode.
Yeah. Right, a question. Is there any idea of time scale in this?
It's the 30 second
yeah, because,
century.
Because, I mean, there was the mysterious burn.
The burn goes back to Discovery.
Third season Discovery.
Right, yes.
Right. Yeah, because, the holodeck, he came out with this throwaway line about, I installed a subroutine about 500 years ago to make me to age himself.
Yeah.
Doesn't age much in 500 years, frankly. Really.
Yeah, he's looking, I mean, Robert Picardo's still looking pretty good.
Yeah. Big grey, but that's about it, really.
Still doing his opera.
One thing I really liked about this, Star Trek has always been Star Trek, but this seems to have taken it to the next level because you've got people of all different shapes and sizes. You haven't got to be rake thin or superbly athletic or anything. It's anyone who can do the job is welcome. I'm loving Sam. she's the
hologram. She's the bubbly hologram.
Simulated.
Yeah. She's wonderful. Yeah.
You only have to look at number one. I mean, sort of half
Jem'Hadar.
Yeah. That's Jeannie Ashery. She is fantastic. She's one of my favourite comedians. She was on Mock the Week a lot.
Oh, okay.
And she's loving it out there. I follow her on Instagram.
That's where I've seen her before,
yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. When she first spoke, I thought, that's Joe Martin.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Look one glaring admission with her is, I mean, okay, she's half Jem'Hadar, but she's not packing the all-important vial of Ketracel White.
There's been several hundred years for them to get past that.
One, we're down 900 years, and two, originally they didn't have female Jem'Hadars, they just didn't have any...
Were they clones or...
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
And two, you've got to remember that the end of DS9, Odo has gone back to the Dominion, so I'm quite sure he had a little bit of influence there.
Yeah. Like you said, nearly 1,000 years. Yeah. You think we didn't have 1,000 years
ago. Yeah, I think it's something... Only about 750, roughly, on from the end of DS9.
Yeah,
you've got it was a thousand years.
It was 900 years from Discovery.
Oh, just okay.
So
close to 1,000 years.
Yeah, Discovery takes place about 100 years before Next Gen DS9 area.
Yeah, so it's about 250.
Yeah, it's about 800 years in total.
Mm-hmm. No, as I was saying, I follow Jeannie Ashery on Instagram. And somebody basically took hold of her hand and slipped a Starfleet, one of those little bracelets you make out of individual tiles. Gave her a Starfleet bracelet. And today she put up a piece. Basically, an Alsatian dog jumped into her car and adopted her. And she said, if he didn't have a collar on, I'd be keeping him. But in the video that she put up, she was driving him back to his address. Okay. And he was sitting in her car looking as happy as Larry. Okay. So she seems to be loving the States. But okay. No, it was good to see her in something other than comedy. Mm.
Yeah, I do love the way she plays her character, though. It's very shouty.
Yeah.
And yet at times there is a hint of comedy, isn't there? It's almost so over the top.
And what race is the commissioner?
Lanthian.
She's like Pella.
Half Lanthanite.
I'm loving her, the way she just flops in chairs.
Sit in the captain's chair like that.
And walks around bare feet.
All the time. Yeah, she takes the Riker manoeuvre to the nth degree.
I just can't help but think of Helen Parr, Elastigirl.
Well, that's who the voice is.
Well, exactly. It's all I've ever seen her in. It's incredible, isn't it?
I mean, it's strange. Yeah, going back to what I was saying earlier about the time frame, I mean, that's what marks this series as being sort of different, because all the previous series are sort of set within a reasonable time frame, sort of 20, 30 years.
A clean slate.
Yeah, but as you say, a clean slate.
Since Enterprise, I've longed for them to move beyond DS9 Voyager.
Mm. That was the problem the first couple of seasons of Discovery.
Yeah.
It was set before the original series.
We're just rehashing old things that we already know about. Now, admittedly, they might be rehashing them again now. But it's with a shiny new wallpaper.
So these kids have all grown up following the burn, not a decent time.
Yeah.
Which explains why, especially in the third episode, they seem to all be hitting juvenile, juvenile stage of growing up.
That was one of the things that the Chancellor said to the Commissioner of the War College. Mm. They don't need to know how harsh the world can be. They've lived it. Yeah. They got here in tramp steamers and crapped out vehicles. So she was trying to give a little bit of joy to their lives.
Yeah. So we've got a love interest going on between Caleb and the Beta Z's daughter the little thing she's got on her neck. Mm. What will happen? Because it's to, did she say it's to regulate her powers? Yeah,
helps her keep control.
So what's going to, obviously, that's going to come off at some point.
As you saw in the last episode that was televised,
it went red.
It's usually blue. It suddenly flashed red a couple of times.
When she was a bit ticked off.
And what happened to the Beta Zeds?
I was thinking that as well. Because
they were telepathic.
In the last 800 years, they, seem to have completely lost their telepathy and now it's down to empathy.
Yeah.
And also, their eyes are no longer all black.
God knows, they locked themselves away for several hundred years, didn't they?
It was only about 100 years, because it's only been about 100 years since the burn.
Okay,
And when the burn happened, the Federation had pretty much said they couldn't spare the resources, because of course no real warp drive at that point, so they had to abandon Beta Z, and that's when they put up their wall.
Yeah.
Well, again, you've got between the beginning and the Discovery, you've got the 900 years. A lot can change through 900 years, and the impression I got, they've spent the last 100 to 150 years under war conditions because they're being attacked by pirates, hence the wall. Now, the psychic wall could be something that has affected their empathy, their telepathic ability.
Yeah. Although she does use it, doesn't she?
She does, yeah.
She's empathic, she's like more Troy.
Yeah.
But Troy's only half Beta Z.
Yeah, but like I said, they have been going a past 150 years full-on psychic. It's been projected in a different direction.
Okay, I can accept that. Maybe that thing is...
Well, a limiter.
When it comes off, is going to make her more like... say, Loaxana than Troy.
Yeah, maybe properly telepathic. Yeah, maybe.
But it's clearly going to be a plot point.
It will crop up, yeah.
It's, what is it, Chekhov's gun?
Yeah.
Yes.
Phaser,
yes.
I think I could do with a bit more peril in it, the series in general, other than the first episode. I didn't think the stakes were very high.
Yeah, the last one was light. Just a bit of Ender's Game style, one team against another.
Yeah,
it was fun. You were getting to know the characters. You were learning more about them.
I suppose so.
But I went into that kind of expecting this anyway, because we knew it was going to be set on Earth, and we knew it was going to be in basically college.
Yeah.
So if there to be world-ending peril every week, it's going to be a little bit hard to explain that.
I didn't know anything going in. I came into it completely cold.
I think
cold.
That was one of the problems with Discovery, certainly towards the last couple of seasons. Everything was galaxy-ending peril.
Yeah.
rather than just a bit of peril that we can sort out this
rather
week.
Rather than personal peril, it's galactic peril.
Yes.
I'd like to step back to personal peril
a bit more maybe next-gen-ish rather than...
Yeah, I mean, the first episode was fantastic with all the bells and whistles, but that's the first episode. Mm-hmm. The second episode settled down into more of a little bit more background and introducing another main character.
Two main characters.
Well, two main characters, yeah. So at the moment, I'm very happy with it. Yeah. I'm very pleased. Some of the half-assed comments online, I can easily rationalise and explain all of them.
Okay, what sort of things have people been complaining about?
There's been people complaining about... I mean, there was one character who was in a wheelchair in the academy. There was one that was wearing... there was two.
The Chancellor had spectacles. So she's also allergic to retinols, like Kirk.
Also, there was another cadet in the exobiology class that had glasses as well.
Yeah.
There was another character on the bridge she was introduced in the first episode. We haven't seen her again since, but she was a little bit on the not as slim side.
That's what I was saying earlier. Yeah. And people were saying,
yeah, I mean, they've been mocked by your sort of right-wing woke groups, but it's people being comfortable for who they are.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's the whole point.
Not only, you know, the people wearing glasses, you know, they might, like Kirk, were allergic to retinox, or they just wanted to wear them.
Yeah. Maybe there were heads-up displays in them or something.
Exactly, personal choice.
Sonic shades.
And despite what certain people might think, not everyone who's on the round side is lazy. You know, some people are just round, some people are just skinny.
Yeah, even if you go back to Next Gen, let's face it, Riker was quite a large chap by the end.
He was.
Well, that's because he used to play Captain America at the White House. Because of Next Gen, he could actually eat.
And then in Discovery, got Tilly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I didn't even pick up on the glasses thing.
And the person who was using the wheelchair, you know, again, perhaps it was
Pike had a wheelchair.
Pike had it. Yeah.
But these people, why
and
do they?
And also outraged that the Klingon is actually wanting to be a doctor.
No, I didn't
have
any
doctor.
I was going to say, how do they think Klingons were healed when they got ill?
Once you must have other professions in the Klingon society. Plus, again, it's 900 years. I personally would like the idea that the Klingon Empire has virtually wiped itself out. Think about it. It's a warrior race.
Yeah.
You can't go anywhere anymore. Yeah. You can't go outwards. The only way you can go is inwards.
Yeah. I think, but didn't they take over? Was that All Good Things where they'd taken over the Romulan Empire?
That was All Good Things.
So that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you go back 900 years in our history.
Yeah.
We were hacking each other to pieces with swords at that point. Things change.
Yeah.
Mostly. And what was that about? Did you say Sharon?
The black and white beard.
They
can't have a Tron there. It says in Star Trek Original Series they were all wiped out. Well, Bacchal and Lokai were off-planet when the planet was destroyed. How many others were off-planet?
Yeah.
There was already one in... what was that?
Section 31?
Section 31.
Yeah, I mean, how many more were off-planet? They had space flight. We knew that from
the less said about Section 31, the better.
Although, I do recall, not that I've actually seen Section 31. Thankfully, I avoided that. And I've got no...
We can strap you down.
I've got no plans to watch that.
Eye grabbers.
But it does look like the character that we saw in Academy and the character of which I've seen shots of in Section 31 both had the same colour scheme.
Yeah.
Black on the right and white on the right. So maybe those are all that survived.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't know.
I just don't understand. I know everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but I don't understand the sort of person who will go online and rage about someone being the wrong colour, the wrong weight, the wrong ability level, and then still try to call themselves a Star Trek fan.
I don't think these people are calling themselves Star Trek fans.
We have it a lot with certain elements of the Who community.
Yeah.
They hate Watch.
Yes.
They don't watch it to love it. They don't watch it to see what it's like. They watch it to hate it.
Yeah.
No, we don't hate it, do we, Adam? It's more sort of middling.
No, I'm hoping it's going to grow on me as I see more episodes and I get to like the characters a bit more. At the moment, there's quite a few of them. They don't seem to have much going for them, at least for me.
Yeah. I get to know them more. Maybe certainly the second episode, the one with all the Betazoids and stuff. Yeah, the rest, I mean, that was a very Caleb and Chancellor Arke centric episode.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
And I mean, also more on Admiral Vance, who we've seen a lot of in Discovery. I mean, it's good to actually have him back. But in the third one, we do see a lot more. And I started to worry in the second episode. I thought it might be a little bit too Caleb focused for the entire series. And I was very reassured in the third episode to see that this was more focusing on Darim and Genesis, as sort of they were sort of kind of competing against each other for.
I think that was the whole point of the third episode, is to get to know the kids, to see what they could each do.
Yeah, I mean, there was still a lot of Caleb focus that, but he's not as much. And I'm glad for that, because it did reassure me going forward for the rest of this season.
I still can't get my head around the detached warp pylons, though.
Programmable.
I know it's programmable, but it doesn't look right. You know, power cut, the warp engines are going to fall off.
In some ways, I mean, it's similar to, you know, like in Star Wars, where you've got those little hyperdrive rings that the Jedi thing is going to.
Yeah.
It's somewhat similar to that, where you've got the nacelles going.
Yeah. I can understand that, and that isn't the problem. The hyperdrive rings on Star Wars are connected. Like I said, you have a sudden power fluctuation and a power cut. Mm. They're not connected.
And
they're just going to go forward.
From engineering, you just hear,
no! the warp engines have fallen. It's my head. It's not a complaint. It's just, I'm trying to...
Well, I think the Athena is the first starship capable of atmospheric flight.
Voyager.
Voyager was. Voyager landed a couple of times.
And also, we got to see the Enterprise in the Kelvin movies land as well.
Yeah, because the Enterprise... And the Enterprise came up out of the clouds.
And the Protostar in Prodigy was also landed.
No, the Voyager...
That's correct.
Yes. Voyager had blue alert. Are you sure you want blue alert? It means changing the light bulb.
Actually, one thing that has really gets on my nerve a little bit is the amount of Starfleet deltas everywhere. They're everywhere. They're on the uniforms. I mean, although I do like the little zipper pull they've got. The zipper pull is a delta, and that's kind of cute.
But the tiling in her room.
There's a great big delta over there. You've got deltas on the side of benches.
Yeah.
It's like, we get it. Well,
That's the trouble. I mean, it's the Starfleet Federation uniform design team. Yeah. We know every 6 months they bring out a new uniform.
Have you mentioned the fact that the blue uniforms look almost identical to the Babylon 5 uniforms, particularly the ones from the Gathering?
I heard some people that were saying that the blue uniforms look very similar to the Battlestar Galactica reboot uniforms.
Okay. I hadn't clocked that, I've got to admit.
First time I saw the blue, that's not only the same colour, it's the same sort of shape as the B5 uniforms. It hasn't got the leather strip in it.
I also thought it seemed like we got many of the Doctor's greatest hits for the first two episodes.
Opera singing.
Not just the opera singing, but...
Tricorder?
The
medical tricorder.
But yeah, it just seemed there was a lot of his tropes being trotted out for that one.
I did like during the initial checkups. I think I've swallowed my comms badge already. It's like he's expecting to see it, but not quite this soon.
And another thing I was surprised as well, it was Occam, who was Jarema's sister. Through the entirety, with the exception of the last scene at the end in the dorm room, it didn't seem like he was made out to be an idiot. But once he got into that door room, he was a clumsy idiot. He's now become a clumsy idiot going forward.
Well, we didn't actually get a lot of Ockham in his first episode. He was there in the background, but he wasn't doing a lot.
Is he the Magatto guy?
Yeah.
I did like the quarters. You got three young men together, and it was an absolute tip.
It's a pretty weird setup because they've got two bunks and you've got a full-size bed in the middle.
Yeah.
Which one gets the bed and who gets the bunks?
Whoever wins rock, paper, scissors.
We didn't even talk about Paul Giamatti chewing on the scenery.
Well, he's meant to be the big bad for the series, so I think we're going to have a few more flashbangs later down the line.
Fingers crossed.
Anything else?
So he goes.
We didn't even turn the timer on.
We did not.
Okay, we would love to know what you think of Star Trek : Starfleet Academy. Write and tell us via show
at
staggeringstories.net.
Woohoo. Okay, leaving the Star Trek universe, we will now enter another universe, one which we all adore. We've been listening to some Doctor Who. Pause for music.
No need. We've been listening to Snare.
Audio Mongers.
Big finish.
That's it. So,
for the love of...
For the
music
stories?
Music stories.
I thought we were going to say something
else. Exactly. It's all like such a rubbish...
I prefer the Strax intro.
For the love of music.
So this is a young Eccles Pop.
It is.
With Billy Piper.
Right.
And we think this takes place... After Rose.
No, after Doomsday.
After Doomsday.
After Father's Day.
That was it. I'll do that sentence again. This is an Eccles Pop episode with Rose, and we think it takes place after Father's Day.
Yes. I thought so, and they confirmed it, indeed.
Yes.
It's at the end.
Yes.
Did anyone hear a bad wolf reference?
I heard a wolf reference, but not a bad wolf.
The little tentacled alien called Rose Wolf.
That's it. So we have a story set on the Powell Estate. We have Rose's mummy.
Yeah.
We have Jackie Tyler.
Always wonderful.
Yep. Jackie Tyler being everyone's mummy.
Yes.
In her pyjamas and pom-pom slippers.
The terrible thing is I can picture those pom-pom slippers.
And at one point, she comments her pyjamas are all damp from plants, didn't she?
Yeah, from the jungle.
It's just brilliant. She's waffling on about Battenbergs the whole episode.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favourite lines, Evil Narnia.
Yes. Evil Narnia. Not only are the main actors on form, but their characters are written perfectly. It's like stepping back into the era, isn't it?
It really is, basically.
There's an alien hot house in the bathroom.
That's it.
Yes, number 43, was it?
Where Kevin lived.
Yes.
Mm. His father.
His father.
Yes.
And Kevin is home to sort out his father's affairs.
His father has passed.
He grew up with Rose, by the sounds of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Mickey, who is... Where is Mickey?
He's in a band.
His band has got a gig.
The
band was mentioned in the novelisation of Rose.
Oh, okay. I was wondering why I hadn't heard it before.
Yeah, no, I think we have a flashback sequence in, as I said, the Target novelisation with Rose in the room with Mickey and the band. So it is semi-canon.
Are they going to have to come up with an excuse every episode why Mickey's not there?
So whatever anyone says about Jackie Tyler, and people have said many, many, many things, she clearly is, as you said, the go-to mother figure on the estate.
Oh, yeah.
Because Kevin, grown-ass man, something weird's happened. He goes to Mrs. Tyler because when he was a boy, Mrs. Tyler patched up scraped knees and did everything a proper mum should do.
Yeah.
Yes. So Kevin and Rose are reconnecting, getting to know each other as grown-ups, as such. And Kevin warns Rose not to touch his father's work.
His father's paperwork.
You've got there.
But yes, there's some groovy glowing plants which respond to camera flashes.
Yes,
but...
from Marlene, who's the...
Marlene?
His college friend.
Yes.
Who sounds a bit rather hoity-toity.
She does a bit.
Yeah, she's taken photos of the other Powell estate.
Mm-hmm. She's
slumming the one where the Lord Powell is.
Yes.
But apparently these plants aren't just jiggling, they're phasing in and out of reality.
Yes.
Our Christmas cactus does that.
Does?
She doesn't. Don't look look at me like that.
Marge or Shooty? Who are we thinking there?
Oh, Marge is fine. Shooty is a young whippersnapper, and he's just had his first proper flowering, so he's feeling quite smug. Not that I talk to my plants.
Much.
It's when they talk back.
That's when you've got to start worrying.
You go into the bathroom every morning and go, morning, Shooty.
Well, that's basically what happens in this, isn't it? They investigate the bathroom. There's plants growing out the toilet. And eventually the plants steal Jackie, Marlene and Kevin.
Yes.
Mm. They don't really steal her. But, I mean, there's a perception filter.
Yes.
And it makes there a different door.
Yep.
So there was Kevin's room, his father's room, the bathroom.
Two kitchen
and
doors.
Kevin's room. Yeah.
That's it. Yep. And the jungle floor is a carpet.
Yeah.
Is that right?
It's very like 11th Hour with the extra door. Yeah.
Right. So that's exactly what I was thinking of.
To my mind, it's 11th Hour and, oh God, the pirate one.
Pirate plant?
No. The 11th Doctor.
Oh,
pirate.
The Black Spot.
Thank you.
Oh.
Black Spot.
Oh, yes.
Because basically it is a slightly phased ship.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
Is sort of superimposed itself on number
43.
Floors up.
What's brilliant about them essentially going through is that Jackie is the smart heroic one.
Oh yeah,
because she twigs straight away. Well, this isn't Earth,
and doesn't panic. Well, not on the surface anyway.
Yeah, so early days for her as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a perfect blend because one of the characters says, I can see bits of carpet through this.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a chair, a lounge chair in the middle of the forest.
It's part of it's a sink.
Yeah.
Scaled up.
The lake. The lake is the sink.
And bollards.
The bollards were
control.
Control parts of the ship so people could navigate.
Mm-hmm.
Some of this is lovely dialogue, sparkling dialogue. Especially with the potato waffles and Titanic.
What was it? Waffles and
burnt fish fingers.
No. I can't remember. Something waffles, not war or something silly like that.
Waffly versatile.
The Doctor even comments, doesn't he? I don't want to watch Titanic. It was traumatic. I was there.
I was there. It was traumatic.
And, oh, God, what's her name? The mother.
Jackie,
thank you. Brain. Jackie sitting down in her pyjamas and dressing gown to watch DiCaprio.
Yes. that's
a little bit,
And, of course, makes you wonder how many times the Doctor was there. Because we've got that picture of him with the family he got off of the Titanic.
Yep.
But then he's also said he was on the Titanic because he spent an uncomfortable night clinging to the iceberg.
So did he go to the Titanic first and then come back and tell them not to get on it later?
Maybe.
You think
or did
know
he got them off first and
happens.
Then said bye and quickly nipped on?
Maybe there's something going on there.
Yeah.
Alien skullduggery, I expect.
Yeah. Something happened on the Titanic. Yeah.
That was no iceberg.
So, what was that creature that was tending to his garden?
Wow.
The gardener, yes.
Spoiler music?
Is it a hydra or something like that?
Spoiler music. Sha-la-la-la-la. It was sort of a hybrid because it was...
I know it could retain people's memories.
Yeah.
The hybrid.
Yeah, it was the hybrid because it was his spider's memories and experiences.
Neural pathways, basically.
You're sort of superimposed on this. Because it could have been part of the natural manufacturing of the ship, like the flies.
I think it was meant to be previous... snared.
Yeah.
There was a particular race that the Doctor said that this creature had been absorbed by the snare ship.
Yeah.
And had somehow manifested itself.
And what made it really feel part of that Eccleston era was the relationship with Rose and the Doctor was quite fractious at times.
Yeah. Mm.
And they had that moment towards the end where Rose was saying, oh no, Spider can't stay here, you've got to bring him back.
Yeah.
And it just reminded me of that scene at the end of Unquiet Dead where they're disagreeing and the Doctor saying, well, it's not up to you.
Different morality.
Yeah, different morality. But it pulled at the heartstrings when it needed to, this story. It did with Kevin dealing with the loss of his father.
Comes on the back of Father's Day, for those two. Yeah.
So it fits quite well.
2 minutes. That's how long it took you to come back and disturb me while I've told you to stay.
Oh, right.
Randomly announcing units of time.
It sounded like he was having a go at us, didn't it?
Two minutes.
No, we
Did
just
I
haven't
set
the
timer.
We haven't set the timer again.
The timer, that's a zero. Context, Keith. Context.
I have only one thing to say.
What?
Okay. Now, on the whole, I thoroughly enjoyed this. Didn't notice it was an hour long.
No.
No, it was really good for
Loved it. I thought it was great. It was a really good introduction.
Yeah.
And I'm thirsty for more now.
Yeah.
There are a few more out.
And it's nice to hear Chris Eccleston again.
Yeah.
And he feels like he's on fine form. He's very happy.
He stepped straight back into
I always wondered what it'd be like for him. Okay, he's been back Big Finish for a while. Mm. To be back with those two in particular, would it bring back traumatic memories?
Yeah.
Because, you know, he struggled on Doctor at the time, but he seems like he's made peace with that.
He's more balanced. Mm.
Oh, he even said a good thing about Russell T. Davis in the,
steady on.
At the end.
Oh, I have to listen to that.
Soundbite.
Who thinks that Kevin is going to be a replacement for Mickey as
wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him a couple more times.
If for the Earth-based adventures.
Following
might even get him to go in the TARDIS.
Following no clocks, fall from grace.
Yeah, as he's Mr. Clark is persona non grata at the moment.
Yeah, so there's no chance that Big Finish would work with no Clark.
Yeah, I really think it's doubtful at the moment.
No, I can't see it ever happening again. I'm still hopeful that Barrowman might return, but
That would make it feel part of the era as well, wouldn't it?
If Mickey
one Captain Jack.
Do they recast Mickey? I don't think they do. They just have to
not the character. Not while Mr. Clark's alive. I don't think they recast.
Jesus,
are you suggesting?
What
something?
Are you doing?
Well, there's a new plan for you, El Presidente.
That's your list.
Oh, in the next podcast, Noel Clark. Dead.
We have nothing to do with it.
Keith's blame not Keith. Here because the police have taken him away for questioning.
We have a Big Finish have just announced. For the love of murder.
Oh, dear.
Anything else?
Yeah, really good fun.
Listen to it.
Nothing bad to say about this.
Yeah, it's good. Go out and listen to it.
It's really good. And when you've listened to it, tell us what you thought about it by writing to us via show
at Staggering
Stories.
.net.
Murder.
To death.
Oh, there's somebody glaring at us with murderous intent.
He wanted to say something, but it's a bit too late now.
He's all squished up against handles.
Ah, 3, 2, 1.
Hello, Hello Pertwee!
Hello, Inky Dinky and Rinking Rick Squirtlot.
Hello, Dave Zilla, the Mighty.
Hello,
Mold up against Terrence. The radio
Hello, Sandy Magnica. Plus Goat.
Graham.
Dangerous Churchill.
Nazi Spock. Folded up and propped against the radiator, Clara. And a Lumen.
And the various goats.
Hi, goats.
Hi, goats.
One goat with one eye bigger than the other.
All goats have one eye bigger than the other. And you don't know that's not true, so you can't tell me it's not.
Probably has to be true, although microscopically.
It's a shame because Jean isn't here, is she?
But she is not here. But I do believe she sent some feedback.
Sent something through the sub ether.
Think of what's a word for corner that begins with J?
Genie's what? Corner.
That's not what I meant.
Oh. It begins with me.
No, not with you. Just play the damn feedback.
Hopefully it'll be positive, because she didn't sound very happy earlier, did she?
Nobody wants a grumpy Jean.
No. God, no. I've seen grumpy Jeans.
Plug Jean in, Adam. Plug her. Plug her
<bed.
laughs> We've got a plug-in Jean.
That did it. Now she is pissed off.
She's humming away.
Starfleet Academy. Well, what can we say? Who said they could nick the Doctor Who diddly-booms.
Yes.
When I first heard the theme tune and it started off, there is a very, very distinctive little trigger note there at the beginning. And I thought, hang on, am I listening to the right programme? Watching the right programme. I wasn't sure about this, to be honest, at first. I thought, is this another trying to catch in on the Star Trek, you know, money and all the rest of it? But I like the fact that it is different from the others. It isn't on a star base. It isn't on a starship, even though it did start on that one.
Kind of is, but
it's actually based at the Academy and is rediscovering the Academy. So it's got room to grow beyond the parameters of the original series. And with having the Academy, War Academy, sort of like sharing the grounds, I can see the two kind of like joining together a bit. I love Captain Nala. Is she permanently on pot or something like that? She can't sit up straight. She lounges everywhere. I think she's a brilliant character. And I did like Commander Thok and Commander Reno. So totally opposite of each other. One, you know, like kind of like, if you don't get your homework in time, you will be murdered, fed to the dogs. And the other one kind of very strict and stern, but not advocating killing all the pupils. And I like the fact that their relationship, it did come as surprises in the third episode, but that kind of like whole little kitten interaction between the two of them and the soft side, that they obviously are very, very close. But it's not played upon heavily. It just is there, which I quite like. I was a little bit kind of, I wasn't concerned isn't the right word, but I thought this is going to become featured around Caleb, you know, our young protagonist. He's going to be the hero of the story, etc. And whilst you need a hook to hang it on, it can get a bit boring if you've always got that same kind of like story about, you know, banned by his mother, father, what have you, or, you know, raised as an orphan, etc. So I thought his backstory was interesting, and kind of enjoying the evolution of his character. And I think the small group around him at the moment, you know, you've got a holographic species, you've got a Klingon, all sorts. They're all developing their own characters in their own way. And I think it's quite a balanced little cast. There's not a huge number of them, but there's enough to not get bogged down in one person's story. I think the one that's going to be interesting is Tarima Sadel. I suppose she's an empath. I'm not sure what you'd call her, but the lady that has the button on her neck to control her emotions because she gets more emotional than others. I think that's going to be an interesting character as she gets expanded on. You know, are those emotions just sexual emotions, or are they anger emotions as well? Because this is a group we haven't seen that much of. But all in all, you know, three stories in, it's got a nice mix of humour. It's not taking itself too seriously. It's different from what we've had before, but it's obviously part of that same family as well, which I quite liked. And I think it's going to be interesting. They do have the facility to go off-world occasionally. And as it develops, I suspect that there will be excursions, training classes, and that kind of stuff off Earth. But it has potential. We'll see how it goes.
Thank you, Gene.
Thank you.
Gene, if they've finished with you at the ice cream factory, could you come back and join us one day?
With ice cream?
There's only so much Neapolitan one woman can eat. Lead us out, Crumbly.
And so, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Thank God.
But never fear, in the next one there'll be more of the same. More fun, frivolity and jollity, more news and reviews, more who old and new. But until that,
A for Academy. Absolutely awesome aardvark eating anchovies and
angrily
consuming acorns with an anvil.
Arbitrarily. Comes ambling anxiously
towards us.
This is me, Crumbly, saying, good seeing you.
Farewell.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Cheerio.
The presence of those seeking truth is infinitely preferable to the presence of those who think they've found it.
Yeah, Adam. You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, series 1, number 490, featuring Adam Purcell, Andy Simpkins, Fake Keith, Asdaman, Jay, and the real Keith Dunn. The views expressed here are the speakers and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers or the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this has been an El Presidente and Fake Keith production for www.staggeringstories.net. Woohoo!
Adam, what is that stormtrooper doing to that goat?
We noticed this last week.
Yes.
Or the other week. So it's worrying.
It is. Although Valentino is a bit of a goer. He takes it where he can get it.
Mm. Well, I suppose if you're on a lonely sort of, garrison on near Mos Eisley.
Well, personally, if I was alone somewhere stranded, I would probably eat the goat rather than pork it.
One thing after the other.
Ew. Aftertaste. But special sauce, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. I've had goat curry. It's very nice.
I'm never, ever, ever going to eat it, even if I wanted to now, because it's just ruined. Gone wrong. Oh, no, that's letters you put.
Can't go wrong yet. We barely started.
This is
oh, has that stopped means
nothing.
Oh, my sweet summer child.
He swiped two of my addendums for the news. I thought I was quite pleased with myself with the list of addendums I had, and then he swiped them.
They weren't addendums then, were they?
No.
They were main
not.
News items.
Obviously not.
No pictures, please.
I don't like.
It steals a little bit of your soul. That's the reason for supermodels. Vacuous supermodels.
Yeah. Mm, yeah.